episode 46 of what might be the most ill-advisedly recorded episode of Consistently Above Average in history. History, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in. The time of recording is not something I want to admit out loud. The week has ran away from me. Friday in particular ran away from me. We are approaching 19 to 20 hours awake as of right now. What I had written out for this episode was fresh off the press this Friday morning. Well, Thursday had different plans. Let me just tell you that. We are getting very dangerously close to a milestone. That's going to be episode number 50. All going to plan between now and 50, we will have had not one, but two guest interview episodes on this podcast feed. A European-based one and an American-based one. Whew. There's been a bit of a come down this week. As to be expected, the week after a tournament or an event, first things first, I'll say, didn't get sick. Usually get a bit run down. That may come next week, but as of now, feeling great, feeling absolutely fresh. A huge leaf after blowing in the room of the studio, the window of the studio. Just threw it out. This week, back in the Northeastern Correspondent studio of Consistently Above Average, last week I was sitting down on a rickety little teal or turquoise casting couch that we had in the apartment, recorded an episode the night before competing. This week, I was prepping for the show in a wonderful cafe in Dundalk. This cafe and restaurant has a couple of names. It's primarily known as Noel's Restaurant in Park Street in Dundalk. It's also fondly known as the Ocean Cafe by people as well, because there are two fish tanks in the wall surrounded by a load of pallets of a wall feature. But for those who have been to some of myself or John Luca's Nogi training sessions, this is also known as the Curry Man's Restaurant. At the time, when I was in typing the notes out, I was in placing a provisional order for another training session later on this month, which has since been confirmed. John Luca, a little bit of an international jet setter, as you can imagine based off the Nogi Europeans run, heading to Mexico. The jokes write themselves. I don't need to mention anything else other than that. John Luca heading to Mexico. Put two and two together. He's away to Mexico for a little bit of a camp and to sign with UFC BJJ, but I didn't tell you that. That part's not true, but he is going to Mexico for a couple of days before Nogi Worlds. Conor Maron, friend of the show, horrible, horrible man to train with, is organising an event on the 23rd of November, which left us with one Sunday left available. And we have decided on short notice next week, Sunday the 16th of November in Newry, the Andrew McGahan, I only put my name first because of alphabetical reasons. The Andrew McGahan, John Luca Maltese experience is back for one last training session of the year 2025. The curry will be there. The food and drinks will be there. Waters, My Waddies, Coke Zeros, Pepsi Maxes, sweets, curry, rice, service with a smile. It's all coming back. It's all coming back. We are asking for a suggested donation. A suggested donation of a tenner. Because we very nearly lost our bollocks on the last one. That was probably our fault. We didn't shake the bucket enough. But we are asking politely for a suggested donation of a tenner. If it needs to be a little bit less, if you're stuck for it, that's fine. If you can afford to give a little bit more, we would appreciate it. But in Newry, Team Tara is Newry, Sunday the 16th of November, big Nogi training session, much like the ultra popular Nogi training sessions and Gi training sessions we have ran over the last year plus. We can't wait to see as many of y'all there. Whew. Right. Now, let's go back to last week. Let's get into the business end of things here, because this is going to be, I hope, a quick episode. I covered basically all I wanted to cover last week from the perspective of what had happened up until that I was competing. The rundown of the day before and the day of is like a log that I kind of have notes written out from my notebook, and I wanted to just archive it for historical purposes. Maybe to listen back to this time next year. So the last person that was competing from Dundalk was Darren, and that I was coaching or cornering until after that I had competed myself. And it feels mental to say this, but seconds after chatting to him afterwards, when he was disappointed, when we were talking about the second match, after he had competed, I just felt a wave of contentment come over me. Like, at this point, there was nothing else to be worried about for anyone else's perspective. The only thing I had to worry about was my own perspective. Being able to have fragmented that entire experience is something that I wasn't used to before, because I was generally cutting a lot more weight than I was last week. So there is a constant worry throughout the week about your weight and needing to train and, oh, am I going to be able to even compete? At this side of things, I knew I'm going to be able to make 73.5 kilo. Now, coaching was a very welcome distraction in the couple of days leading up to it, and I did feel that it just left me with enough time to switch gears and get into my own side of things. Now, in terms of the weight, the day before I left for Rome, I was a little bit over 74 kg in the gear that I was planning on competing in. I ended up weighing in at 72.2 before I went on to compete. Let's add it all together. Italian espresso is the equivalent of a colonic irrigation. That'll clean you out, first and foremost. A good Italian espresso. Really only taking on like one main meal a day, usually in the form of a nice pasta dish, getting a bit of training in at the venue, the heat in the area as well, because you're in and out, you're out of the house for most of the day, you're at the venue for most of the day. I think it just helped altogether. I think it was brilliant. And my warm-up was very thorough. I definitely sweated a little bit, but what a result in the end. Instead of stressing, I ended up 1.3 kilos underweight and felt great. Felt really, really good competing at this weight. The venue, the particular venue in Ostia, it's one that I've competed in many times over the years, in a variety of states of despair, comparing to how I felt with my weight and how healthy or strong and not drained I was before competing, reminded me of missing weight in that venue before, at a day before weigh-in. So for AJP, you can weigh in the day before. I missed weight for the evening weigh-in, which meant I had to then rehydrate slightly, take fluid back on, eat a little bit, and then go back home and basically start cutting weight again for the following morning. Because the weigh-in window for the next morning is before the tournament starts. So I was saved massively by the fact I had something at the time like 4 or 5 hours from when I weighed in to when I had to compete. If I had to compete shortly after that weigh-in, I would not have been able to compete. I was absolutely death warmed up, and I wasn't able to move from the mats for about 30 minutes afterwards, just sipping on an electrolyte solution mixed with Powerade, mixed with water. Like, it was awful. Got back to the apartment, went for a sleep, and I remember thinking, if I don't feel right waking up, there's no way I'm going to be able to compete. And just thankfully, everything kicked back into gear and into life and started working again, and then it was all right. So I've been at the severe end of it, and then this was the comfortable end of it. And when it came to like the day before and after the lads had all competed, I had a very good get out of jail free card when it came to avoiding socializing. Thursday evening, lashing rain in Ostia. terrible. Recording the podcast gave me a passable excuse not heading out to meet with them for dinner or ice cream afterwards, but the rain, that solidified it. It was like, no, I'm not going out, and that'll get soaked. And the reality is, it wasn't them. Mentioned it last week. The dinner was happening. Heard it was great. It wasn't them. It was me. I had absolutely no desire to be aimlessly chatting. And I enjoy all the people who are there. So it wouldn't have been an aimless conversation. But I had it in my head that it was like, I'm going to be wasting my energy here. Like, using up social battery, using up energy, worried that it would somehow take away from my ability to do jiu-jitsu the following morning. In my head, the job was not finished. Everyone else's job, finished. My job, not finished. My job is tomorrow. I ended up, I think, recording before either. I can't remember if it was before or after I recorded the podcast. I think it could have been before. But I went back to the venue on the metro so I could triple check my weight and sit in the stands just as the day was finishing up, as the absolutes were running. I was sitting in front of the mat that I was going to be competing on the next day. That was mat 7. And you're just sitting there thinking about what could happen or what might happen the following day. What side are they going to put you on? Are you going to have to wear the manky green yoke on your leg? And trying to imagine that you are like watching yourself walking onto the mats from the perspective of the crowd. How's it going to look when you're walking on? What would you be like looking at yourself? Like, I was just sitting there like an absolute loser for about 15 minutes just looking at that mat. And ended up back to the apartment, got the episode recorded. A little bit later after that, John arrived into the apartment shortly after I'd finished recording. And we unwound for the rest of the evening by watching some of his favourite Conor McGregor YouTube shorts. And then we watched the Los Banditos ADCC camp vlog as well, which is a very, very good watch. Morning of the tournament, woke up nice and early. Tested our friendship as John had slept on the sofa. He was knocked out to the world at that point. But I had yogurt and fruit for the breakfast. Nice coffee as well. Nice espresso sitting on the balcony. I was up, ready, packed from the night before. I was leaving before he'd even woken up properly. He was stirring as I was leaving. I said, see you later. See you down there. Let's go. Today's the day. Gone from the apartment. Everything bought in the shop the day before. We were prepped. Everything I needed was bought the previous afternoon. Wasn't going to have to stop on the way. Left myself with plenty of time. I'd say I got there just over 2 hours before my match was due to start. Watched from upstairs for a little while. Went back to that mat again. Sat at mat 7. Grand. Nodded. Said hello to a few people. Headed downstairs to get changed. When you have been around a venue or around venues for a while, you might find out or know stuff like where the secret toilets are, what changing rooms have good toilets in them, where there's not going to be as big of a queue for toilets, different stuff like that. The new thing that I learned from this venue is a secret little passageway outside of the venue that will take you to a staff car park that there is an all-weather pitch beside it that you can warm up on. It's near the building that is the international judo training facility for the Italian team that has unbelievable facilities on the inside of it. Like, and you can only imagine the state it would be left in if they let jiu-jitsu people into it, but it is an unbelievable building. So doing a bit of jogging, doing my shuttles, doing my sprints, jumping about the place, listening to music about 15-20 minutes, wearing my spare kit, my other no-gi kit, my third no-gi kit, the alternative kit that I had with me, hoodie on, got a really good sweat in the weather, then got some very specific training and rounds of sparring and scenario stuff, warm-up stuff with Dylan O'Donovan in the warm-up area as well, which was very, very helpful, very useful. Where possible, I do like to be able to roll and to be able to move around and spar before the matches. I would say started to slow down and finish up around 25 minutes before my match. Headed up to the bullpen. my rash guard deemed illegal by the Gee checker. Two other checkers that she consulted with said to me they would have allowed it, but the discrepancy is down to the person who you are with. They said there was too much grey on it, or that there was grey on it in general. They took a photo on an iPhone, which is always going to brighten a photo to begin with anyway, brought it to someone who said, nope, you can't compete in that. This, what it was there's little vents and mesh at the side of the rash guard. They said that they were grey and white. However, to prove the point that they were white, what the lady kept doing was stretching it out. Like literally stretching the material out with her two hands to point at it and say, that's grey, that's white. And I wanted to say, you can stretch anything and it's going to change colour. But I can see where they're coming from. It's not just a whole one tone of black the whole way through. My only issue of it was is that whatever about, say, oh, well, I did Nogi Euros in it last year. I did Nogi Worlds in it last year. Let's assume that the rules changed in January. I competed in this rash guard 3 weeks ago in New York, which means you're telling me that the qualified referees, same as yourself, didn't do their job correctly in New York. So who am I to file the complaint with so that the guy or the girl in the Pan Ams gets fired, assuming this person was correct? Anyway, no matter, Northeast Jiu-Jitsu black belt Ross Taylor, standing the other side of the bullpen next to me, I asked him right away, can you text Turlo Sheehan, please? I think he has a black progress rash guard. The only reason Turlo came into my head was I said well to him, past him, the day before, running past him, he was wearing a black progress rash guard. I was like, well, he, at least I know he has access to one. I don't care if it's sweaty. Fair play as well. Shout out Reedy and Simon from Newground. They were on their way to go get me a King's one from the shop because my match was in the next 10 minutes. And all of that can create a little bit of a panic. But I did feel a lot calmer in that situation because I knew the rules to a degree of the IBJJF. They couldn't DQ me within the next 10 minutes. The matches were running earlier. I actually have a lot more time than the board is saying that I do because my original time was scheduled for 15 minutes after what was showing on the board now. So I had at least 25 minutes, 30 minutes before there was going to be a problem. So I was like, I'm going to get a rash guard. It's going to be sweet. I'm already warm. I'm ready to compete anyway. That'll be grand. Once it happens, it happens. Get through the bullpen. Shout out as well. A lot of shout outs today. Shout out to Ireland's favourite podcast guest. That is, of course, Chris Letty. Came down to the venue early for the day for the matches. He was in the black belt area coaching me, himself and John Luca. A nice little contrast. There's loud for the sake of being loud so people can hear you, which you'd get at domestics. But then there's loud for the sake of being able to relay the information to the person in the middle in a crowded venue. And Chris, in that field, is absolutely in a league of his own. Outside of Seb, my own coach's strange, like calming influence, that the fella that watches you train every day is there and it's like, yeah, knows what is going to go down here or hopefully what's going to go down here and what you're going to be good at. Chris Letty, pound for pound, bar for bar, the man you'd want shouting for you in a tournament. That venue is a little tough though. And it is tough to hear what's going on and you do need to focus in a little bit during it, but really appreciated that. And it's always, always, always good to have a voice that you recognise cheering out for you, if nothing else. So then we get into the matches. First match, I got the guard pull from what I can remember. After one or two retention and guard passing attempts, I was able to get to close guard, realising I was against an MMA-based grappler. Very tight and very tough on top, but I was able to get to closed, which helped him a little bit in terms of being able to like arms into the armpits, get up to standing. I was able to maintain the closed guard. My muscle sweep attempt did absolutely nothing, but I had a feeling that my best chance of setting something up would come from the closed guard or come from at least being there at the start because it was the furthest point away from him being able to pass my guard or to try and go explosive and to try and stack. I did get into a higher close guard, bit of rubber guard actually type action on display as well, trying to set up an omoplata. But when I felt that I was getting closer to isolating his arms, I also felt like that my opponent in the first match was getting ready to hit the ejector button at the first moment that he could to escape something like that. When that happens, they have a chance of stacking you. They have a chance of getting around, turtle recovery. So in my head, it was essential that I didn't concede the first point or advantage in that match, that I got ahead and stayed ahead. That was the focus from beforehand. Thankfully, able to do that. Was able to work a K-guard entry from there, get in on his leg, in on a knee bar, use it to sweep the top. This was something I'd been doing a little bit in training for the last while. I knew that when I'd get on top, I had two options. That was either sit back into saddle, but with that, you'll run the risk of giving them 2 points back if they use that momentum, if they come up on top, or sit where I was, wait for him to try and move to uncross his ankles to attempt to like hip escape or shrimp and try free his leg, which he did. As soon as I saw the ankles separate, dove in the leg, got the knee bar, first match done. All right. Now, Tom Halpin said to me years ago on a podcast that we did that he likes music in the bullpen, but he also likes to not listen to music. Because if you go on a good run, you think, oh, well, it was because of that. But what happens then if your headphones die or your phone isn't charged or something happens? Then you'll think that you won't be able to do well because you don't have the music that you need to be able to get warm or whatever. Do you know? But I had made a conscious decision about my attitude, how I was going to try and feel and talk to myself going into the matches. I had a playlist on my phone that was essentially cut in half. Music for the bullpen and music just before I would compete. Music for the bullpen, lower, chilled, relaxed, calming. Something you could be bopping along to, but just tracks that you like to listen to when you're relaxing. And then a higher intensity type track, higher BPM type track for the 5 to 10 minutes before my match, when you're on deck, as they might say. And I fully believed going into this tournament that if I stand there as normal, shoulders rounded, head bowed, looking to the ground, nervous and meek, you're going to carry that energy into your match. You're going to compete like that. Okay, so I'm not saying this is what you should do to win matches at majors, because I don't think that this is going to be for everyone. This is something that I fully believe in. I would kind of like separate a little bit from the group at competition class before we do serious rounds. And in my head, I'm like, this is a tournament. You're not going to be standing laughing, talking to the fella before you compete. You're going to be by yourself. You're going to be moving back and forth. You get ready. Timer goes. Clap hands. Let's go. Right? Now, you don't have to be or act in whatever way. You don't have to see somebody else and think, I'm going to do that. You don't have to like have some sort of like superstition routine sort of thing just to do it. Like for me personally, on that day, in that moment, for the first time that I can confidently say competing in a tournament, I felt like an athlete. I felt like a proper athlete that had done the preparation correctly, that had gotten the ducks in a line, that it had the good sleep, that it warmed up properly, had anything that we'd needed on that day, apart from a legal rash guard. I genuinely felt like the person who was going to win all four matches by submission and then win a European title. And bring a European title back to motherfuckers and put a sausage and bacon bap on it just for the laugh. I was leaning into that and I trusted in my training that I was going to have a chance at doing that, that an opportunity would present itself for me to be able to do that. Whether I would capitalize on it or not, another issue, but the opportunity was going to present itself. And I was tipping back and forth beside the mat, in step with the music, dipping the head, moving side to side, just staying active, moving about, staying warm, chatting to myself, reminding myself of the principles of urgency that were required when I would go out to the match, telling myself that if this guy gets the chance, they're going to break your arm, they're going to break your foot, they're going to put you to sleep, because they want to win this tournament as well. And you need to win. You need to have that urgency in every match. Second match, he was either wearing a friend's rash guard or he trains in a gym. He wasn't affiliated to that gym on the IBJJF, but it's a gym that I respect a lot, have lost to their students before, know who they are, very good gym. So I was thinking like, this is going to be tough. Same process, back to the bullpen, calm down, a story for another day, but having to click in and out of Instagram quite regularly because of the pattern recognition of my hand, of my right hand, was just like, oh, I'm on my phone, going to click into Instagram. It's like, nope. Getting well-intentioned tags and messages, but I was like, can't be looking at that just yet. I was in communication with one or two people who are watching on the streams at home, keeping me focused, watching the matches, or watching the other people's matches and telling me what to expect in the next match, and that was all good. Second match starts. Didn't like how the guy pulled guard. To be honest, personally, thought it was a penalty. I can't turn around and start talking to the ref at that point because then I'm going to get a penalty myself. Just didn't think the guard pull was clean enough. But the focus on task was, if they beat you to the guard pull and they're trying to get a guard established, they're going to have to earn it. It wouldn't be for me stepping into the position and giving them a head start. I was using feints, using hand movements, even though from going back and watching it, I did feel I was a little bit clunky. But changing the levels of my feints, changing the level of my head, changing the level of my posture, moving side to side, outside passing attempts that was making him doubt his guard entries, which I thought was good. I don't know how he got connection, but we did end up in a very strange position that was like a fake Berimbolo type back tick where he was on his side trying to get at my legs. Very odd position. I was in a position where I felt I was able to attempt a back take, but I had to keep my feet safe as the priority for that. And I was aware of the boundary position that was behind us, that any scramble or attack from him now is going to get him an advantage. He'll end up taking top position or get the 2 points. Anything that might go from me trying to attack his back and him ending up countering and coming up on top, that'll be 2 points for him as well. Then, in this split of indecision, I noticed his feet, both of which were bandaged. This is not to be rude. That wasn't a fashion decision that athlete had made. If your feet are bandaged, there's a good chance there's something wrong with them. There's an injury there. This wasn't a stylish-based decision. I was able to get a grip of his foot for a toehold grip that caused a big reaction and scramble from him. I was able to follow it in a way that I don't think I have ever drilled or trained before, but I knew that I had a grip of his ankle and I knew that I had to bend it in a certain way. And when I was able to turn into it, come up on top, I was able to put huge pressure on the end of the rotation, driving it in heavy, to be honest. We got a pop. We got a couple of pops, which caused a scream in terms of verbal tap. And I'm going to say how lucky I was here, because it was almost, if not just before or just after, at the same time that the ref was shouting "paro," which is stop, as the match had gone out of bounds. Now, I would have got the 2 points for that anyway. I lost it. One of my most embarrassing moments as a competitor. I was so filled with adrenaline at that point. Shouting, delighted, filled with adrenaline. In my head, I knew I had just broken a podium. I'm on the podium. And that's something to maybe analyse for did you lose your focus in the semifinals. But it was also because I was able to break a duck, a mental duck, which was someone beats you to a guard pull, you give up top in an easy position, you get swept, and you're not comfortable on top. I have worked so hard on trying to be a little bit more comfortable in some of these mid-range or closer range passing positions that I was able to stay focused, stay on task, address it scenario by scenario, avoid the things that have been giving me trouble in tournaments before that I worked on in the gym, and I ended up submitting them. And it was a quick enough match. And I was initially worried that the match was going to be restarted, but he was severely injured, so couldn't continue regardless. So that was the end of it. The referee respected the verbal tap and assumed or believed that to be quicker than his call for the out of bounds for the stop. All right. To finish up, I have not watched my final match back. I have not been able to watch my finals match back yet. I will at some point in the next couple of days. But I know exactly what went wrong. I know exactly what went wrong. Two things in particular. One, with framing and use of my frames against the body lock attempts. I feel I did really well to stop any points being conceded. That's number one. Number two was, and for want of a better word, an overstimulation of three potential options presenting themselves to me at a time where I was aware that I was down on advantages with time running out and I'm about to score 2 points. I had swept to a top position about to score 2 points. I'm thinking, is his legs going to separate so I can go on the leg and submit him? Should I slide off here to be able to take top? Should I try secure the position, staying on top, and then try and free my leg from the saddle and turn it into a scramble? Maybe convince him to stand back up in that scramble so that I can get the guard pull and be two up with a minute and 15 left, and then rely on him not passing my guard. In this sequence, when I think that I'm about to get 2 points, I take a little glimpse at the ref. I look at the ref as if to say, are the points coming yet, ref? They're not. Not here yet. This is a stupid thing to do, especially from the position that I had landed in. Fair enough if you've landed in another position and you're just having a wee look as the yawn is coming there. I'm really sorry. But that instigated a sequence for my opponent to be able to work towards my back. And I can guarantee you we have been doing a bit of work on that position already this week. He worked towards my back. He got my back. He took my back. He choked me. There was a thought process in my head that was thinking, this is on. Are you going to go to sleep? Are you going to go to sleep? Can you keep getting your fingers in just to try and see, does he let go in time? I thought, I'm very close to going to sleep here. I might shit myself. I might vomit. Nearly did vomit after the tap anyway. I was like, I've a notoriously poor, I don't want to say gag reflex, but I'm going to say gag reflex. And that's not what I mean. Reflux. I have a notoriously poor reflux in that sense. That hang on to a rear naked choke on me for a little while, there is a chance I might spit up a little bit. So that was something I did not want to do on a stream, or potentially in front of cameras. Shit myself or vomit. Two things you really like have top of your list when you're going into a jiu-jitsu tournament. Objectives for the day. Not to shit yourself. Not to vomit. Certainly not in the digital age. So bronze is all it was. I feel that there is a future discussion and talk about the after effect and the disappointing feeling, but the mix of proudness of being like, well, I was able to put it together, and then like the negative realization that, like, what if Gianni Grippo decides next year he's finally a master? Like, that'll be a tough one. Do you know, that was possibly my best chance to be competitive for a gold medal at that particular division, because you really don't know who's going to be in the Master 1 division the following year at Black Belt. And watching the standard of adult, I'm like, yeah, I'd love to be at this stage now at the age of 24 or 25, but the reality is I'm not. I coach and teach way too much during the course of a week to even consider thinking that I could make a run at adult at a Nogi major. Simply not there. But in terms of coming to the realization and being aware of the realization that that particular medal might just be as good as it gets for me from a competitive sense. And that will not deter me from trying again. That will not stop me from trying again. That will not stop me from going to Las Vegas in 5 weeks' time for the Worlds. Because funny enough, now I think that this is my best chance that I'll have at Master 1 in particular to break a world's podium. But the reality is, like, this is sport. You know, somebody has to win. You could have a good day. You could get a good draw. These things could line in your favor. Someone could get knocked out early who would have given you problems later on in the bracket. These things happen in sport. And the reality is that there may be a time in the future where I have to be at peace with the fact that that is my best competitive result as a black belt, and to be honest, probably in general. And that's a bridge that we will cross to when we have to cross. It is 1:40 a.m. as of right now. This is going to take me about another 20 minutes to go. I'm so disappointed that I didn't get it out on Friday as promised, because we were on a good run. But I wanted it to be out for the people that are heading to IBJJF Dublin. Thankfully, I didn't get to record it earlier on. Or people heading home from IBJJF Dublin. I wish you all the best of luck if you're competing today. I hope to see as many of you as possible at the venue. I'd love to see a few more people wearing shirts at the tournament as well. That'd be great altogether. But within the last couple of hours, Ireland BJJ have announced that the Irish Martial Arts Council has agreed to recognise Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as a sport under their banner. This is something that we are going to discuss on the podcast next week, and what the implications of that might mean and what that could mean for the future of the sport in this country. It is a great starting step, and it is a great thing, and fair play to the team. I had heard that something like this was very, very close to being done. The group that I had heard, it is not fair for me to say it was this. I believe they had made inroads in it. Whether that was the thing that then was able to collaborate with the group that announced it is a different thing. But there has been, as far as I'm aware, collaboration amongst people that just want to help push this sport in the right direction. And I think that the guys involved with it that have made the announcement are the people that run the national tournament that have the experience in those sort of things. We need to give them the fair shake. Let's hear what is going to come from all of this and what the plans are, what the next 2 to 3 to 4 years might look like in the country if that is the way that things go. And then you've, it's the same, I was about to say it's the same as with an election. Somebody says what they're going to do, and then you can re-elect them depending on if they do it or don't. However, that doesn't really apply to the Irish political landscape and stuff like that. So this is great. I do not want to piss on people's parades straight away. This doesn't mean there's going to be a national funded team ASAP. You can see, and we will get the figures properly over the next little while, because my knowledge and information of IMAC is, I'm aware of them. I'm aware of them through a ruling that was suggested that they should allow mixed martial arts to be considered as a sport. And that didn't really happen the way that it was meant to happen at the time because of X, Y, and Z reasons. And we will discuss all of that on next week's podcast and how it could be linked to potentially the formation of a jiu-jitsu national team and so on and so forth. Thank you very much. Episode 46 in the books. Episode 47 last week. At Consistently Above Average on Instagram. Andrew McGahan signing off. Tired, but very happy, as I am currently, you can hear this noise now. It's been 38 minutes since I've been able to have a Ferrero Rocher. I'm making through a birthday tray of Ferrero Rocher that was got for me after getting home from Rome. Stunning present, stunning gift. They're generally a Christmas thing. But when you get handed a 42 tray, the big tray, 42 golden, deliciously wrapped items of Ferrero Rocher, this is just brilliant. I'm just going to pop one right now. Enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the Dublin Open. And I will talk to you next Friday, all right? Good luck. Here's the ASMR. Here's the ASMR crunch. Tune out now if you don't want to hear the ASMR crunch of the Ferrero Rocher, right? Good luck.